Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, friends, and welcome to an Unexpected Podcast. I'm Ez.
And I'm your name, Smith.
You know not my name?
I know your name. give me a minute. I'm tired. I leave the room.
Lane. It's Lane. He's called Lane. Smith. Lane Smith.
Lane Smith.
I'm just so fatigued. Where's my hammer? Oh, there it is. Oh, ooh, I was sitting on it. Sorry, I'm good.
You just got. You know what? And I think you said, thankfully, to start this off, that I. Stanley, keep it positive, as I can hear your tone going.
Stanley,
no. But hey, guys, forgive me for last episode when I didn't know how to say. What's her name? Dania? Oh, God. What is her name?
He doesn't know either.
What?
Dania.
Mirdania.
Yeah.
Mirdania. Kelly Brembor don't know her name. Okay?
So it's kind of like they like knew you were going to have a problem with it, and they wrote it into the future.
Unbelievable.
Like, it's almost kind of low.
Unbelievable. They listened to the show, and like Peyton McKay was like, watch this. Let's make a name that Ez can't say. We know he struggles with the Elvish. All right? Watch this. We're going to smoke him. And then his favorite character is going to do the same thing. Like, literally, actually, they know that I like Celebrimbor so much, and they said, we're going to make this guy we're going to tear him down. Right in front of Ez, we're going to throw some little kind of, I don't know, like, he seems like, I didn't want to say he seems like me, like, it's such a weak version of Celebrimbor, I just don't even, it's insulting. Sorry, I'm sorry. I didn't want to go down.
Good episode. Good episode.
Yep. My bad.
Yep. Easy boy.
Here we go.
Easy
slow it down. Hold on, bro. Get on back here. I'm like the dog like off the leash in Mordor. You know what I mean? Like the
yes, you are.
Right.
Yes,
I mean, give me a Waldreg to kind of like gnaw on here. I mean, anyway. Wowzers. So. Okay, guys, Lane typically does the summary. Are you cool if I do it this time?
I prefer it, please.
Okay, yeah, I think
yes.
I'll go ahead and give us a summary of this one real quick. So, episode starts off, the Rings of Power that flashes up on the screens that they're created in the year 500 of the Second Age. Celebrimbor and his smiths were deceived by Annatar Sauron. They finished the Rings of Power for 9 men and 7 dwarves before this year, which is going to be 1590. 1590, they finished those rings. Some years prior to that, Annatar had to retreat to Mordor. He had to go there to finish his Fortress of Barad-dûr. Celebrimbor makes 3 special rings without the influence or the touch of Sauron. Now, then later, as we saw in the episode, 10 years later, I can't believe they got this, though.
What a time jump.
Yeah, I didn't think they'd do it, but 10 years later,
they pulled it off.
Right?
Yeah.
The One Ring is created in the year 1600 of the Second Age.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable. But, wow. But I mean, again, this is again right down to the. I mean, they got they dotting the I's and putting the what are they called, the doubles, the double dots on the A's. Anyway,
the umlauts.
The umlaut. Thank you. Yes. Kelle Brimbor and the other elves realize that they're deceived, though, right? He created the One Ring.
Yeah.
I mean, so we all saw that, and you saw Kelle Brimbor, right? He seek what does he do? He seeks the counsel of one of the wisest individuals in Middle-earth. Lady
Galadriel.
Galadriel.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. So let me actually – I they took this right from the book, so I wanted to go ahead and read this.
Yeah. Get it right.
This was like straight in the script here. Now, Kelle Brimbor was not corrupted in heart or faith. They nailed that.
They did.
Not corrupted in heart or faith, but had accepted Sauron as what he posed to be, and when at length he discovered the existence of the One Ring, he revolted against Sauron, and he went to Lothlorien to take counsel once more with Galadriel. They should have destroyed all of the Rings of Power at this time, but they failed to find the strength. Galadriel counseled him that the three rings of the elves should be hidden, never used, and dispersed far from Eregion where Sauron believed them to be. It was at this time that she received Nenya, the White Ring, from Kelle Brimbor, and by its power the realm of Lothlorien was strengthened and made beautiful. But its power upon her was great also and unforeseen, as it increased her latent desire for the sea and for return into the West, so that her joy in Middle-earth was diminished. All right, so Kelle Brimbor then follows Galadriel's counsel that the Ring of Air and the Ring of Fire should be sent out of Eregion, and he entrusted them to Gil-galad in Lindon. So, I mean, that just, they, he travels.
They
so, like, the crazy thing is he's got this great relationship between he and the, you know, the dwarves of Khazad-dûm, and so he actually travels through their kingdom.
Wow,
right? He travels through their kingdom, and he goes all the way over to what we now know as Lothlorien. She advises him, hey, hide those three elven rings that you made, all right?
Especially from the dwarves. Yeah.
Especially. Now, I thought that was that was clutch. And to see her in her realm in this episode, I was like, dude, wow.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah. So then at
big payoff. Big
huge.
Payoff.
Been waiting for that. So at some point, though, there was this meteor with a wizard. Who forgot his name? I'm not sure. Honestly, none of the elves also decide to check on it. He went out east or something. Oh, wait, sorry.
Yeah.
Wait, my bad. That was wrong book. My bad, dude.
That's the Book of Pain and McKay.
My bad. Switch back. Got to keep it positive here. My bad. For over 90 years, So, I mean, this is another time. They did a double time jump in this.
Dude, they did such a good job, too, of showing the time, but not making us feel like too much, like we had missed.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Masterful. Dude. Masterful.
Right. I mean, it was like they could have just revealed it on the screen, you know? Well,
with
would have been
title
fine.
Or something.
Would have been fine.
Dude.
We would have ate that up. But I mean, they went ahead and did like a, hey, let's show you 90 years. So, and actually what they did, I mean, you guys saw it. I mean, Sauron is actually in his completed tower, right? I mean, he's got the tower in Mordor because he's been there for a long time. That's his, that's his stomping grounds. And he's sending these emissaries back and forth to Eregion. He's saying, hey, guys, I helped you make those rings. Those are mine. I'm asking nicely. Send them back. He was still in his fair form at this time, right?
Yep.
So they're thinking, okay, like, what should we? Should we not? I mean, again, reminding us that he put on the One Ring. They took him off. I mean, actually, they perceived, and they were like, my God, this guy, okay, this we've been deceived. And he is like wanting all of these rings now because they were deceived. The elves they got wise to it, and so he wants to spread these out to everybody else, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So that goes on for over 90 years. Again, fantastic. Until he decides, and this is Sauron himself, he decides to assault Eregion in the year 1697 of the Second Age. All right. So
he had enough, dude. He asked in his defense.
I know.
We saw it perfectly executed. He asked nicely a bunch.
Yep.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Over and over.
You know, and he had good claims, and again, he was helping them, etc. Blah blah blah. So he leads his army actually through what we now know as Rohan. So that's the region that he'll take us through. I don't know if you guys noticed that in the episode today that's the region where the army. Really cool. I thought it was a really cool tie-in.
I like
to
how
kinda,
subtle it was.
To go back. It really looked like Rohan, didn't it? I mean,
it did.
The region that they were marching their army through. It was crazy.
Yeah, 100%.
So he's leading his army, and it's just him, by the way. Nobody else. He's actually the top.
No father, no children.
No, dude, he's man. He is it's wild. So then the craziest thing though, like, and we've been since season one, we've been saying, is this dude going to show up?
Yeah.
And here we are at like a Regian, like Sauron's there. You've got Celebrimbor he's in there. He said, I'm going to fight him. I'm going to keep these rings of power. I've hidden the three. He knows I've got these, right? He doesn't know what I did with the other three. He's got them here. Guess who rides to his defense? This is nuts, dude. I think the big shocker for this episode, Celeborn, dude, he defends Aragorn, man.
Yeah.
We thought this whole time, we're like, okay, where's Galadriel's husband? Not sure. Are they doing that? You know, and blah, blah, blah. We heard Payne and McKay right back in season one. They're like, of course she has a husband, right?
Yeah. Come on, dude. Don't worry about where he is, because it's going to be a big surprise later.
They got us.
They pulled it off.
They got us. Yeah. So, Aragorn is defended by Celeborn. So, anyway, also, Elrond's on the way, and we can kind of see where this is all going. You're right. You got Lindon's going to come in there, get aid. Maybe Numenor. We'll see. It seems to be foreshadowing. You saw the end credits, didn't you, at the end of this, where they're kind of talking about next episode, the little trailer.
Yep.
I just couldn't believe how well they had, because the motives, right, for the sack of Aragorn is, it's that, like, the motive is Sauron wants those rings, dude.
He wants those rings.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Galadriel, being one of the wisest and one of the oldest individuals in Middle-earth, gives that counsel. I mean, I think that's also the thing that kind of earns her that ring, right? Is that she gives that counsel. And so, and
Celeborn, you just kind of wonder if it was a test from Celebrimbor. Was he like, kind of like analyzing, is she worthy of a ring? What's she going to tell me?
Well, again,
will it be safe with her?
Remember, according to Tolkien, Celebrimbor was not corrupted in heart or faith.
Right.
So, I mean, again,
amazing too, right? Isn't that amazing that he worked that closely with Annatar?
Oh, dude, unbelievable.
By him and then still came out. Right. Like, how do you even do that, bro?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
In the Third Age, we've got characters, they can't even put the ring on without being corrupted. He, like, toiled and sweat with him.
Yeah,
created with him. He was unsullied, baby.
Unsullied. Yeah. Get this. I'll just read right from what Tolkien said. This is some of his letters. And again, I think they nailed this in the show. When Sauron learned of the repentance and revolt of Celebrimbor, his disguise fell and his wrath was revealed. Yeah. Right,
couldn't
help himself. So then he could sense that from Celebrimbor, and he realized that this was sort of a rebellion, in the hiding and the dispersing of these three. So I don't know, man. I don't know about you. And by the way, at the time, I just want to go ahead and, because this was subtle, but you might have missed it. The One Ring's been forged at this time.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's had the One Ring since the year 1600. That 90 years flat. Like, he's got the ruling ring, which is nuts. Yeah. To think about, right? All this power wrapped up in there and stuff. That's why he wants those other ones. So it may not have seemed like that in the show, but at the time of the Siege of Aragorn, all the motives and all the stuff, he's got the freaking One Ring and he's coming to get the rest of them. It is just a wild setup for one of those big historical moments that takes place, in Middle Earth. It's one of the, it's probably one of the biggest events in the Second Age.
Biblical, man. It's biblical.
I love the fact that they just nailed it. They nailed it. So anyway, guys,
what would we have done if they would have messed this up, man?
Oh, I would have thrown a fit. I would have thrown a fit. I would have been like, you gotta be like, dude, if they, Matt, dude, I can't.
Dude, hold on. If they would have messed this up, we would have had to have done like episodes where we found things that we thought were good, where we kind of scraped the bottom barrel, especially as our like knowledge and our awareness grew, we would have had to just scrape the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, had like a good episode, and then to make sure that people weren't feeling like, even playing it, it's like, what the?
We would have had
to put all of our gripes like on some other platform, like even Patreon or something. That's what we would have had to do.
Probably had to do that, yeah.
They saved us, bud. They saved us, dude.
They did, because, I mean, think about this, dude. Think about this. I mean, this is like, so, When you decide, hey, I'm going to pin down the Second Age events, this one right here, there's a lot of deets on it, dude.
That's a lot of details.
There's a lot of details on it.
A lot of pillars. A lot of pillars. And just think they could have gone in and just been like, yeah, but let's just sort of like take names and characters and do our own thing. They could have. They could have. And that. You know what? I bet millions of people still would have thought, hey, it's okay. But right. That was the easy way, man. That would have been like.
Well, dude, I mean, imagine.
The Numenorean.
Imagine
like the
if
fall
they.
Of Numenorean
hey, hey imagine if they would have started this. Because years ago when they started this, they said it all starts with a map, right? Imagine if they would have said it starts with a map and then they led the army, right? The like Sauron's army. Yeah. Like not even on the exact path that like it was on the map. You know what I mean? Like it was actual.
Can you imagine?
Dude, could you imagine if they did? Like I would be just wow, wild.
I don't want to talk about it at all. If that's what they would have done, and just jeez.
I guarantee somebody is listening right now, going like, "As you are a
as
like,
lost, no, as
lost
like
his living. Mind, lost his mind."
As is creating. An adaptation of Tolkien Untangled show, like with hand puppets or something, is what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, dude. I mean, I just wanted to. By the way, all right, break out of storytelling mode here.
Yeah,
that is. I did not pull it from our Patreon episode. I thought I was going to pull like some snidbits of me talking about, you know, like a kind of a teaser as to what we talked about in that last Patreon episode where I laid out all the motivations for going into the Siege of Eregion, and I'm like. Literally none of them are there.
Yeah.
None of them are the same.
Yes, you did.
Like, not a single one. I wanted to pull that out, and I thought, you know what? What's a more positive way to do it? And people were like, that wasn't very positive. As you totally
No, I think, dude, but honestly,
that's the story.
To defend what you just did there, because I always will.
Thanks, buddy.
I don't think it's – I think, honestly, what you just did – these are the episodes where we focus on the good.
Yeah.
That's what you just did.
Exactly.
You just focused on the good. You know, and like you, I don't think anyone can argue that. I think you'd be a fool to.
You'd be a fool to argue this. That's a good setup to the Siege of Eregion right there. It's so good that I think the author himself penned that bad boy. I mean, holy smokes.
It kind of feels like it, doesn't it? Jeez,
it really does. The craziest thing is that, like, you know, you're looking at this and you're like, every single kind of, I don't know, when you're looking at this battle in this pillar and you thought, dang, okay, they're going to focus in on this. We can forget the Numenorean time crunch, all this kind of stuff. At least Sauron's going to be leading this host in here. No way, right? I mean, at least Celeborn's going to be there to defend the city. No way. At least, like, you know, he'll have sought counsel for Galad. Like, some of this would be the same. And it's just like, I could go on and on. But that was the Cliff Notes version. That's the Cliff Notes. There is much... Yeah. Much, much, much more to it than that, and it's crazy. The dynamics between Lady Galadriel and Celebrimbor are so much more interesting. You even said if you wanted to do a show where you could you wanted some sort of love angle or forget the fancy word you use it, but you know where like maybe Celebrimbor was kind of into Galadriel or something like that, and then didn't work out.
Some relationship tension. Yeah.
You could have thrown that in there as a little sort of like something, because they do leave and Celeborn ends up staying there and Galadriel kind of leaves, but they were lord and lady of that realm for a hot minute. And it's just like, holy smokes, dude. Anyway, back to the actual summary of the show. So you ready for this?
Where is he?
Who?
That's the title of the episode. I don't know if you caught that.
Oh my god! I didn't even see it, dude. Oh my god! That is it. Season 2, episode 6. Where is he, Lane? I didn't even see the title of this daggone. That's the title. Where is he?
I think maybe they're thinking like, you know,
are they talking about a Rondir? Because where is he at, dude?
Where is he? He makes a 5-second introduction where I think the purpose of a Rondir there was to show us that the sack's coming. I mean, essentially, it was that little map. I struggled to remember. I'm like, wait, what part was he in? Why did he just kill a bunch of orcs? And then why is he running through the forest? That's it. He's literally just a plot device. I think where is he is referring to like the orcs of Middle-earth saying like, where's Sauron? Where is he?
Where is he, dude? Yeah.
Where is he, man?
Speaking of that, I'll get to our positives, actual positives, legitimately. Yes. I think people are like, there's no way I can take you guys serious at this point and think that you're actually giving true positives.
These are legit, dude.
All right,
that whole
sort of summary for you was one of my honorable mention right there. So that's my, you know, I still got my three. But that is really from, it's me summarizing, The Fall of Numenor, by the way. I'd like to This is, let me see here. I got this from, shout out to Max over at Paragraph.
Yeah, baby.
Brian Sibley is who's the one who edited this, and he put these things in order. He took the second age and literally, like, he pulls out, like, Council of Elrond. When did they refer to the Rings of Power? And he puts it all in order and everything, and it all leads up to the Fall of Numenor. It's amazing. It's awesome. It's out there if you guys want to get it. Like, I highly recommend it. I think it would be a lot of fun. And by the way, I still actually enjoy. I'm enjoying watching the show. I'm enjoying watching it with my wife, and I'm enjoying doing things like this. Like pointing out the lore inconsistencies. It's fun.
This is the reason I'm enjoying the show, for sure. And Brian Sibley, huge shout out to Brian Sibley. He was the mastermind behind the 1981 BBC radio dramatization of The Lord of the Rings. And you could almost argue that without that radio drama's creation, we wouldn't have The Lord of the Rings trilogy from Peter Jackson. At least it wouldn't be the exact, you know, it wouldn't have come to fruition in the same exact way, because they had copies of the cassettes and CDs on set, and people, along with reading the books, they would listen to the, if you haven't heard it, it's incredible. I think a lot of people have, but I think it's on like Audible and stuff too, but it's a dramatization with music and sound effects, and Ian Holm plays Frodo, which is pretty incredible. Oh, wow. So Bilbo once played Frodo. You've got Bill Nighy as Sam Gamgee, Michael Horndern as Gandalf. It's really good. I mean, it's nothing like the movies, obviously, but it's, you can see how they listen to it sort of for inspiration. So let's get into the good, baby.
I think that's a good shout out to him, because that is really cool. It's a great book and a great resource, and it sounds like he's done some good work in Tolkien's Legendarium. So. Okay, I'll hit you with a quick summary, though, like a real one of the episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You down?
Yeah, yeah. Please,
by the way,
remind me.
The episode, the episode is not titled "Where Is He?" It's actually titled "Who Is She?" Sorry, I don't know if you got that. I think you got that wrong. So,
who is she?
Who is she? Yeah, Myrdania.
Oh, that's right. That's right. What's her
you
name?
See, you
What's
forgot. You already forgot. So
yeah, I forgot. I
not,
no one can remember.
Not where
her
is
name,
he,
geez.
But who is she? Okay, so sorry. Anyway, golly, Ned. So this it starts off with Arondir just running through the woods. As we said, he gets the little Maparuski there to the siege, and I guess maybe he's going to go get reinforcements. You know, he's gonna probably going to bring
Bring.
I mean, maybe he gets Celeborn.
He'll get Elrond, or maybe he gets Celeborn.
Maybe he gets maybe he maybe is he Celeborn, does. Dude. Holy smokes, I didn't think of that one. Where is he? Is like, I'm thinking Celeborn. Where,
it applies
where
to
is
everyone,
he,
doesn't it?
Yeah, applies to everyone. Yeah, literally. Yeah, where is Celebrimbor's mind right now? Where is he? He's not really in his right mind. Holy smokes. Anyway, and actually that's the next sort of scene where we go to Eregion, and Celebrimbor is like looking around. He's frustrated. What's going on with these rings? He's basically chewing out Myrdania. He doesn't even know who she is, as we said. And then you've got Sauron stepping out there, basically saying, look, hey, you're frustrated. You're tired. There's a lot going on. Your people want an audience with you. And he's like, look, no, I got to finish the Rings of Power. All right. I got to finish what I started. And Sauron respects that. Right? He wants that. So he pops outside and he says, I'll handle your people. Got the administrative duties under control. They're looking at the different messenger in there, basically. And that's the messenger's got the, you know, it's chiseled on his chest. Where is he?
Right.
So, that was kind of crazy. He and Myrdania seem to have a moment. Again, there's a lot of long, lingering touches and eye gazing.
Tension
and stuff going on there. So, yeah. We then have kind of like a Denethor moment with Adar. He's sitting there at dinner with Galadriel, and the food don't look too bad, actually.
I thought there were plenty of berries and grapes. I was kind of
raspberries. I mean, the orcs are Where were the? I mean,
Where was that in the pit in season one when all these elves were getting killed? Remember that? When Arondir was in the pit and everything, having to dig the trenches and everything? Where was the humanity then?
Keep it positive. This is Lady Galadriel.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
Respected in all of it. So, I mean, he... by the way,
he was waiting for her. He was waiting for her.
He was waiting for her. Sorry to go down this route, though, but the only one who has given her any respect at all in all of Middle-earth is Adar. Adar is the only one who has actually spoken to her with respect. I just want to point that out.
You know why? It's because he kept saying, this is the subtitle for this episode, where is she? That's what he kept asking. Where is she?
Dang, this title. This is, they got us. They got me spinning in circles. I wonder if they just changed it multiple times throughout the day. They just like, it's a revolving title. They retitle it.
Each time it replays when you fall asleep.
Oh my God. For sure. Oh my God. Yeah, then we'd be like a Celebrimbor. We'd be like, I thought it was, you know, we're forgetting the name of the title. That would be genius, actually.
What have you done to me?
What have you done to me? Oh my gosh. So anyways, they have the dinner. And then, you know, she's still a prisoner. He locks her up. I don't know. I mean, there's also some tension going on there too. I don't know if
the way he closed, this might be one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
The way he closed that lock.
Oh, dude. Oh, dude, kind of.
I think that was the intimacy coordination. I was just like, dang, I got little chills went up my backbone.
Wow.
There's some metal touching this for sure.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know exactly what that means.
This was getting dark. Yeah. That was getting dark.
Dang, dude. Wow.
And spicy. So now, then we go to Numenor. And oh my gosh, dude. Elendil, just like, dude, come on, man. Just why is he so faithful, Lane?
Yeah. I don't know, dude.
It's bad. Anyway, so we get the whole scene there where he's sort of being judged, and he won't name our Pharazon as the king, and so he won't do it. Moving on here to get through our summary, we have a quick little moment with the stranger, possibly Gandalf. I'm not sure if he's I don't know. You guys tell me what you think. Is he getting a Gand? Is he taking it off the tree? He might be. So, could be a Gandalf. I don't know.
Good luck there, mate.
Right, good luck. And he's failed every test so far. He's failed every test. And we do learn something interesting in this movie. We learned that all those lines that Gandalf is speaking in the main series, he actually learned them all from Tom. So that was kind of cool, right? I mean,
so in a way, as if you want to, like, if it helps guys like you and me, yeah. Tom Bombadil's kind of in the trilogy now, isn't he? I mean, really?
Absolutely, like, dude. Absolutely. So when Gandalf says those lines later on,
his spirit is there.
Yeah, he actually heard them first. It wasn't like Gandalf's wisdom or something that Tolkien wrote specifically for Gandalf.
Right.
It was actually Tom Bombadil who told Gandalf about those, you know. You know what I'm saying? You get me? Okay.
Dude, it's very important to give origin stories for specific quotable lines. It's very important. I think when they write things, that should be number one. It shouldn't be like interesting plot or compelling dialogue or even like characterization that really hooks you. It should be like, let's explain where really quotable lines actually originated.
Yeah, yes.
Because it's just a way to kind of claim it as your own in a way. You know what I'm saying?
For sure, dude. Well, and exactly. Yeah. And I also, it's creative. You know what I mean? It's got its own origin story. Because like for years, right? Everyone's watching and they you know, Gandalf's delivering these lines and we're like, oh, dude, he's so wise. He's giving guidance to Frodo and everybody and whatnot. And then we're like, well, dude, he got that wisdom from Tom Bombadil, dude. He didn't. I mean, come on, man. Like this is lore, dude. And so
and then someday. Hold on real quick. Someday, you'll have some kid who's like, you know, Mommy, Daddy, what's Lord of the Rings? And like, if that kid's parents as a kid now, they'll be like, oh, well, you got to watch them chronological, buddy.
Yes.
And so they'll watch Rings of Power, then they'll watch The Hobbit, and then they'll watch Lord of the Rings. And that kid will be like, Dad, I don't get why people like Gandalf so much. And the dad will go, I don't either, honey. Where did those lines come from?
Yep.
Oh, Tom Bombadil, Daddy. That's right, buddy.
That's right. That's right.
All hail Prime. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I thought it was a really, it was important. It was an important move. And we don't get a lot of that in our, you know, in cinema anymore, right? Or in media.
Not in modern times.
We don't get a lot of that. Anyway, moving on. So we got a quick moment there. Then we also get some of the stores, right? We get Nori kind of talking.
Get a little kiss too.
Is this the first kiss we've had in this?
I was thinking about that. I think we get a super wide shot of Bronwyn and Arondir.
Okay,
and
that's right.
We almost get a face sucking of Galadriel and Sauron.
That's right.
And for a minute this episode, I thought we were going to see, I know I'm jumping ahead here, I thought we were going to see Elendil and Muriel get a little.
Me too.
A little soft tongue action. I mean,
they pulled that right off the page. So I thought,
that's lore.
I thought, dang, dude, I didn't expect. You know, sometimes there's lore, and you're like, I'm not so sure they're they're going to do it. You know what I mean? Because
go there, kind of a deal.
Yeah, it might be whatever, but they almost did anyway. But yeah, so we got Nori there, and she's doing her thing. Rufio's making out with Poppy, and her holding hands and stuff. So that's pretty cool. That's gonna probably bring together the. I'm just guessing this is our hobbits, right? From these loins,
yeah.
Right?
Is sort yeah. of a,
okay.
Yes.
I figured that's how it works, dude. That's see again, like you said about the quotes. It's like they're showing us the origin. Of these hobbits that we're going to see later on. So it's, again, there we go. Okay, bounce back over to this sort of barren wasteland. It's out in the east. This is, Tom had another home outside of the Old Forest, and it was over in the desert. And
in
case you guys forgot, his role, and it's always been this way, it's, you know, is to train wizards, right?
Yeah.
So when the Istar show up in here, right, that this is his kind of job. He's there to guide them. He trained the first wizard who's kind of gone bad. He got his his staff.
Old Ben Bombadil is his, kind of his common name. Yeah.
It's his common name. He's known as Old Ben Bombadil. Out beyond the, not the Dune Sea. Oh, what's it called again? It's the
Rune Sea.
The Rune Sea. That's right.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They are. Now. I'm mixing up fandoms. That's my fault. So, anyways, up to this point, the stranger's failed a lot of tests. And so now he's got to go back and he has to. There's one more test. If you fail the next one, you're done. And see, this is that rule of three.
I didn't know there were limits. Did you? Yeah.
See,
true.
You missed that, dog.
I'm
telling you, dude. This is, again, they're not just. They're not just pulling words off of the page, right? They're actually looking at some of the themes and stuff, right? And some of those bigger, symbolic things that are in Tolkien, right? So it's three tests, dude. He failed the first two, and this is the third one. So now, look, if you don't pass this one, right?
This episode's called Where is Three?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I just realized
I just refreshed it, and it looks like, yeah, you're right. Holy
Where smokes. Is Three?
Where is Three? Anyway.
Sorry, dude. Okay.
No, yeah, we're good. So then we're so he's got to decide, does he go down in there, and does he wander for months and get his Gand, or does he choose his friend? Does he choose his destiny, or does he choose his friend? What's he going to do?
All right. And Tom's kind of like, why, is this even a choice? And rightfully so, right? Like, friendship versus
fate.
Destiny. They can never be. Yeah, they can never be the same. You always got to choose one or the other. And I mean, that makes total sense. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So.
Yeah.
All right. Now back to Khazad Dûm. Now this is lore because they dug too greedily, right? We know that the dwarves of Khazad Dûm. And this is more the realm of Moria. They went too deep, dude. And so we're starting to see that. We got a lot of gold being brought up here. By the way, this gold that's being brought up here, it's already in the shape of like a golden goblet. They've got
They forged it real quick.
Yeah, dude, I didn't think they worked that fast, but they really
went ahead
and mined that. And they're like, look, we found this deep in the mountain. And here it is. So
maybe like in the same way that that Mithril is called true silver, like true gold is when you find it already like crafted into something.
Crafted.
Dig in here. Oh, it's a bunch of coins just falling out of this rock. Or like, I found a vein of cups, guys. Get a bucket.
Get a bucket. And
we don't know anything about.
Mining. Again, how do you think? I mean, you go look at the Lonely Mountain, and it's just like, okay,
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of treasure for one mountain.
That's all it is.
God, dude. See, actually, it's crazy. You get to a certain point in the mountain, and you'll find that the Ark in Stone, that is very much not something that you can polish up and sort of forge or craft into something else. That's when you know the mountain's done. It has given up all. Actually, I think the Ark in Stone is what is making those golden goblets and those coins further up in the mountain, right? That's down there. That's super deep. And that's probably what it, but I just was shocked by that, because that was one that I didn't know about lore-wise. So
I was happy
to see that I got schooled on that one. We got D3, D4 kind of going at it. It seems like Daddy and Son are at, at odds with each other, the ring's working its magic. It seems like it's working its pull on D3. Now, I thought it was the opposite. I thought that there was no Yeah, I mean, it seemed like, by the way, this was sort of a deep cut. I don't know if you got this, Lane, but like,
yeah,
Anatar shows up, he teleports because that's...
Yeah.
He's there in like split second. He teleports into Kazadumi, speaking with D3, and he actually refuses him. He refuses like this order and the persuasion. And again, this is the guy who's like crafting those rings. And at the time, and I was wrong earlier, at the time he doesn't have the one ring now. I misspoke earlier when I was reading from the book.
I know. You know what I'm saying? So he doesn't
have that control over D3 yet. And I
think what they're showing with the teleportation, and later on we see like the environmental cloaking. I think we're seeing like his power grow.
Yeah.
And it's because
Going back to the themes in the works of Tolkien, characters are dynamic, all of them. They're all dynamic, and they all have to show some growth and progress and, you know,
if it doesn't make sense, like, you just have to, like, and I don't care what anyone says, like, those are the haters, dude. Those are the trolls. That's who, when, okay, a little aside, I know that we're breaking from the summary.
It's all right.
Payne and McKay came out recently, and they were talking about these kinds of folks who, you know, they have questions. They talk about this quote-unquote lore, which they're not even getting right. They're talking about, you know, finding things that they dislike with the show. And they said, you know, well, of course, like, it wouldn't be an adventure in Middle Earth without trolls. They're welcome to come along the way, you know? So,
yeah.
So these are these kind of people who are like, you know, they're saying stuff that just not even, they don't get it, dude. They don't get it that, like,
they don't have valid complaints.
I know.
If they were valid, I mean, okay, but like, it's not even, they're just trashing the show to trash it. And I hate to see that, because that is just.
And what I really hate the most, okay, and like, I feel like we should apologize to Payne and McKay for this. I really feel bad for them, you know, and I've never like said anything against them. I've never said anything like to tarnish their reputation. I don't even know them, okay? I don't know them.
No, right.
I would never say, you know me, I would never say something like that.
Yeah.
Or imply. I would never even imply that I would say something like that. Or even, I would never even think about implying, about thinking that I even thought about saying something like that, okay?
Yeah.
And to me, it's just like those people that they're talking about, these real-life trolls out there, and they're out there, man.
Oh, yeah.
If these trolls are saying that they're the trolls, right? And they're going like, ha-ha, the trolls are calling us trolls. That's ironic. And
right.
I don't like that in Middle Earth, man. I want that out of Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm sorry.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I just refreshed the episode and the title changed to Where Are the Trolls? So
you've got
to
be kidding.
No,
me.
Actually, I'm sorry. Where
that
are the trolls
genius.
Now? Where are the trolls now? And it's like,
oh,
dude.
Oh my god.
Like, okay, there. I mean, that's get them.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Dude.
Get them.
Isn't that a Gandalf line? I think that's a Gandalf line.
Holy
from
smokes, dude.
Return of the King.
I think you're right.
Wow.
I think you're right. Anyway, so yeah, great point. I mean, by the way, it's like they brought Damrod in there. I haven't seen him in a bit, but I think they're saving him for something.
I know. I'm ready for some.
You know, he was gonna be one of my three, but I didn't see him this episode.
We're waiting, man. He's making us wait.
Maybe it would have been obvious that he was approaching a Region, and I get that. So, you know, it's
true. I mean, he's
they
very
don't,
his
hey,
presence.
They don't leave the city walls unless you're coming into their city, like in a Region. They don't know. Like, once the people stop coming into the city, then they're like, there must be a problem. So otherwise,
that's most cities.
Most,
I mean, that's
Elven
legit.
Realms. Yeah.
Most Elven realms, and they only have one road in and out. That's lore too. That's books. Go to the books and check that out, guys. That's
right.
That's legit.
Go look
that's
at Rivendell, man. Look at how, you know. Again,
true.
I mean,
he doesn't say Gandalf is it Mordor, is it left or right? He says, "Let's go, Gandalf," and they just go.
Exactly.
I think it's in the books. Peter Jackson kind of took a liberty with the movies and made it
did.
Seem like
there's
a way in a way. Nah, the books. It's like one road
way.
Leads to.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Don't even get me started on the liberties that Peter Jackson took. Do not even get me started.
What an excuse. I don't know if we can still use this term, but what a whitewashing, dude. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He straight up ruined.
The fact that he didn't have Tom Bombadil in there, I mean, this is a complete.
Oh my God.
Old Forest, skip it. Are you serious?
Dude, don't even get me started on the scouring of the Shire. Like,
I know, man.
Peter Jackson. Okay.
Come on.
And then he put in 1,000 endings anyway.
Great.
But nerve on him, dude.
Right. All right. Sorry. That was a quick aside there. Almost done. So we got everything kind of wrapping up the conflict there in Casa Doom. Let's bounce back over to Numenor because while all this stuff is going on in Casa Doom, at the same time, like, Elendil is alive. And he is over in Numenor facing issues with Farazan and all this stuff as his daughter comes in and she's sort of like, hey, you need to just, let your pride go and sort of pledge yourself to Farazan. He'll spare your life. I begged for this or whatever. And he knew it wasn't going to work. So they bring Muriel in there. And I think there's something going on. This is something that was hinted at in the Legendarium, but it seems like there's a relationship possibly between Elendil and Muriel. Are you catching that?
Well, yeah, I got a theory. I know that, I think we're going to get a big reveal in season 3 that now Isildur's mom ain't really dead.
Shut up. Seriously.
Okay. I think we're going to find out that Isildur's mommy's a queen, kind of a deal. Now, whether he was... Oh, God. This is just more genius. Whether Elendil really was faithful.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yep.
Maritally. Will be revealed, I think. But, I don't know. I mean, if your queen asks you, you kind of have to, too. I mean, that's the other thing, too. So, he could have had, Isildur's mom could have been, his actual mother figure. But I think the one who birthed him.
Yeah.
I think it's Muriel. And I think that is a... I think there's really? Some allusion to that in the Akalabeth, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, I think there's some kind of Tolkien.
It's too much. There's too letter. I miss stuff sometimes. To be honest with you, it's just too much.
I know. It's okay. Me too.
Well, okay, so we got all that going on, and then we're back to Casa Doom real quick. Dude, Disa's powers and her ability to summon bats.
Yeah, well, she's my least favorite character now. I mean, that's just not, that's not okay.
Yeah.
I hate bats, right? So
the I know. That, again, they threw that in like, there. This, again, these guys, they know us. Peyton McKay, dude. Like,
dude, they know it. They're literally trying to get our guy. I love these guys. And here's the other thing, too, that I thought was kind of genius is, you know, like, most people are going to be like, oh, yeah, like dwarves, these hardened dwarves who live in caves, they're always around things like the bats and stuff. Like, they would be scared by bats. Yeah, they would be. Because, like, you know, I'm a smith, you know, and I'm, like, kind of dwarven and stuff. And like, I've always related to the dwarves, my favorite race of characters in the whole, all of Middle-earth. And I would, you know, like, that would terrify me. So, to me, I just felt like, yeah, of course they're going to run. Like, you know.
For sure, dude.
Be totally scared
did you,
off. Yeah,
dude, did you see how big those bats were?
They were huge. I mean, they were, like, probably the size of two dwarves.
Holy smokes, man.
One of those catches you by the nose, and it's gone. Like, you know, even Narvi's, it's gone.
Gone. I mean, yeah, like, the talons on those bats, like, dude, they were, I don't know, man. That they grow them big. They grow them big.
Yeah, they do. And yeah, they do. Doom.
So.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
That was scary, dude. So, anyways, that cool moment for her right down there. They're trying to stop all this nonsense going on in Casa Doom. Then we bounce back over to Numenor, and it's, you can do a trial by the Valar if you want to. You can just be tossed into the sea, and like the sea monster will take you down, and if it deems you worthy, it'll let you go, right?
Dude, okay, and the other brilliant thing they did here, Payne and McKay specifically, overseeing the writing team, is they literally, quite literally, everything that all these trolls out there have been like blasting them for, they reference the lore.
Yeah.
Like they've got this like right-hand man to Pharazon Belzegar who's taking me out saying, it's in the lore. Mm-hmm. It's there.
Yep.
And I just thought that was genius, dude. Because I just thought to hold myself,
on.
Like,
I bet you missed this. I bet you missed this. You remember when Galadriel was on that raft with Hallbrand at the time?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, again, another deep cut from lore. That one, I mean.
Oh, bro.
Deep cut there.
It's in like a sentence. It's like in one sentence in there.
Dude, yeah, like literally.
Yeah.
And but remember the sea monster that was sort of attacking him or whatever?
Yeah, for sure.
Right, and you remember, like, Sauron was down there, and that sea monster was coming at him, and it deemed him worthy?
Yes, it did.
And it went around the side?
He survived the trial. I didn't even think about that, man.
Crazy, dude. Trial by Valar, and was sent back.
My God. And that's why, eventually, it gets trapped in a lake in outside of all places.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right.
And it's called The Watcher. And I bet it's because
he's seen
the eye. And I bet he's trapped out there to try and finally get one last little dig at those dwarves who didn't do what he wanted them to do. Yep. God, that is just
deep, dude. Deep. So
real quick, sorry, I'm watching it again.
Yeah.
So just the name just changed again, dude.
What was
this? This is my another watch through. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Season 2, episode 6, The Right is Always C.
Wow. The Right?
The C is always right and flipped it so it rhymed with Where Is He?
Got it. Oh my gosh, dude.
Oh my gosh, these guys.
Dude,
they can't be stopped, dude.
No, they cannot. Things are starting to add up and make sense, though. But right, the C is always right. You know what I'm saying? And then you think about what happened in this episode. And you think about what happened with Sauron and Galadriel being
there
making the right decision to come back. It's just like,
team up. Yeah.
It's all coming together. So that was cool. Anyways, that was just a really, again, another cool scene there. She comes back. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed, but on the hill, like while she is going in and doing her, you know, sacrifice and she walks in there.
Yeah.
I don't know how that creature got underneath all of the rocks. And all, like
a big crevice. Yeah, it's like sinkhole or like
sinkhole,
some kind of
like
lagoon.
Yeah, it must be that it just exactly come underneath the reef there and like put the tentacles, boom, pulled them back. Yeah, that was crazy. So there was that, and then as she comes back up, did you notice that it seemed like people at first you see what maybe 10 people there when it's just Elendil, and then you've got Muriel who shows up, and on the far horizon you can see tons of people. Tons of people have seemed to show. Yes, dude. It starts off like 10 people are there to witness this execution. And then you've got on the hillside, all these different, like, in the distance, a bunch of people. I don't know how they saw anything from up on that hill, but they were gathered around. And it was that was interesting.
Maybe they had some kind of, like, a Palantir projection or something, because we see that.
That's
next. We see that, like, in a couple seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, what'd you think of that, dude? That was, I mean.
Yeah, I thought it was just a great use of them, again, like, finding origins for stuff, because in season one, this is I have to apologize for something, okay? Like, I really am sorry.
Go ahead,
dude.
Go ahead.
Okay, get it off. It's been bugging me for 2 years because I just felt like I kind of jumped the gun.
Yeah.
Poor Tristan Gravel, mm-hmm. I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I apologize.
It's okay.
But I kind of came hard at him. Pun intended. But I was just like, dude, by the calluses of my hands. Bro, you look like you ain't even picked up a toothpick, you know, like,
right.
Ain't no calluses on his hands. We're speaking to the Union Uprising, you know, which again is very heavy lore based. But I see now, like, they literally even gave an origin story for that dude.
You're right, dude.
Putting his hand on that Palantir and getting burned by not only Sauron's eye, but also the Stranger, it looked like to me anyway, kind of the Stranger's eruption. Might not have been. Might have just been a volcano. I couldn't tell. It was confused even me. And then we get to see Halbrand revealed as Sauron to Pharazon.
Yeah.
Which was just – and he kind of pulls back, and you can tell, like, that hurt my hand, but I like it. Like, you could tell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's touched the darkness to go all the way back, deep cut.
Right,
he's touched the darkness.
Yep, yeah, dude. I think
he
you're
likes
right. It's
the touch.
It's like by the calluses of my hands, and it's literally this moment right here. And like it starts off kind of like blue and glowing, and then there's this red fire, as you said, and it literally does burn him, which is insane. It was beautiful actually. And yeah, you're right. It shows. It's if you stop real quick, you'll see that's Halbrand, and he realizes, oh my gosh, that is actually like the Dark Lord. So. Yeah.
I know.
Crazy. I mean,
it kind of seems like for all of the deceiving that we had, this is just another big, beautiful payoff. All the deception we had in season one, like everyone knows that. We've got
everybody knows.
I think Adar knows, like, hey, Halbrand is Sauron, right? Yeah, he is. You got Pharazon figuring it out. You got, like, Elrond somehow knows. I think even Círdan is like, you know, I saw him on my ship, mate. Like, everyone's just kind of like, well, yeah, we knew he was. Like,
yep.
No.
Yep.
Chill out. It's okay.
It's making sense. Yeah. So no longer a guessing game there. And
No. I don't know that it ever was. You know, like
no,
I think that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All credit to them.
I think you're right. I think it's unfair of us or anyone to say that there's a guessing game going on with the wizard. I mean, there's so many clues littered in there that, like, come on. You know, you're really calling this a guessing game at this point? Like, no.
True, dude.
So. Anyway, cool stuff out in Numenor, and then we get back to Lady Galadriel and Adar having a conversation I'm going to break form. That just never happened in the Legendarium because Adar doesn't exist. But I mean, anyways, sorry about that. Sometimes
does not exist.
I've got, like, I don't know. There's, like, two – I pulled, like, a Celebrimbor there, and I just – I lost myself, you know?
I know.
You go inward, and I'm back. Sorry about that.
Oh, God. Hold on. What have you done to me?
Yeah.
Unhand me, friend. What have you done? You've done the same to me.
Yep. It's going around. The darkness is spreading.
Okay. Let's get back centered. Let's just no more. We've been elaborating too much. Like that was not right. That's not right.
Right.
Okay. Take us home.
All right. Take us home. So then just to finish her out here, we've got Galadriel's pulled away. She realizes the deceit of Adar and that she's like, this is all to his plan. Sauron set this up. You're falling right into his hands, Adar. Like, don't do this. And I don't know if you kind of mentioned it earlier, but like he also reveals to her like the forging of Morgoth's crown, which if people don't know, Morgoth was friggin' huge. Huge, dude.
Yeah.
So the fact that they mentioned the crown was reforged and refit, it's like that, honestly, deep cut, bro. I mean, I literally, even Lottie was like, so that was the previous Dark Lord's crown, but it was like resized to fit his head. Yeah, you got that one.
You know what
that.
I would have loved?
Crystal
I think it would have been, I think what they need to do, because they, it's like, So I'm thinking about designing a t-shirt for the show just because they don't have any kind of like merch out there. Mm-hmm. I think something they should do that would be so deep cut would be like a hat version of that crown, but make it like snap back adjustable.
Dude. Now you're talking.
Right? Like, and you know what? Hey, it, baby.
This flies in the face of every single one of those trolls out there who saw that crown in episode one and like, oh, just Morgoth's crown. Yeah, right. It was Morgoth's. That was huge, dude. Well, dude, you got to wait. They are explaining this over the course of eight episodes, man. So, yes, that was Morgoth's crown. And later on, they say to you, literally in this episode, it was reforged. Okay?
Yeah. So, and also, they didn't understand, they missed that line that said Morgoth's crown has the power to kill the one who comes after Morgoth.
Yep.
What? How did they miss that?
Dude, telling you straight up, that.
Whatever.
Again. Yep.
Yeah,
so,
sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. To bring it home here, so we get back, they're moving in on a Regian, stuff's going down, and then you've got Celebrimbor is freaking out. I hear noises. He's outside. He's supposed to be forging away. And then he walks outside, and then the power of Sauron creates this vision in his mind. Instead of seeing all the war and people running and stuff like that, he sees just what Sauron wants him to, peaceful, like a regular, it's at peace. Don't worry about it. Come on back inside,
out,
man. The weather is fine out there, man.
Yeah. And then he says, oh, hey, by the way, check out what I got from Khal Ed Din.
Yeah, yeah.
Little mithril dust, man.
Right.
And check out, 1/9 portion, it breaks up evenly into 9, man.
Well, and that's something we missed earlier, which is that, remember, he was, D3 refused to give him the mithril. But what didn't see was he slipped on downstairs to Narvi on his way out and got some mithril from Narvi, right?
Dude, I did some digging on the internet today. Supposedly there's a deleted scene. They've got a whole, I didn't know if you know this, but they have a whole slew of deleted scenes. They're planning on, once the series is done, doing an appendices version. Just to kind of stick it to that Peter Jackson joke.
Okay, okay,
right?
Okay.
That clown from down under.
Got
and
it.
And
good.
A scene that they're hiding is he actually, sorry, I'm losing my voice. I'm so
You're
moved.
Fine. You're fine.
He kind of transforms into Narvi's wife.
Shut up.
The premise of the scene is that he somehow transforms into Narvi's wife and says, if you want it, give me that dust now.
Yep.
And he says, I swore I wouldn't. I swore to Durin, my king, that I would never give it up. She said, you ever want inside again, then you give it to me now. And that's how it cuts there. We don't see anything. We don't see anything because that would be, and it's all in Dwarvish. It's all in Dwarvish, so it's fine.
Oh my god!
You can't read it anyway. So
Blade.
It's like,
oh my god, dude.
So that's what happens. So anyway, I just don't know. I thought that was a whole other layer of depth and darkness to Sauron. That to me, I'm like, bro, that fits.
Why,
dude.
Man?
That's where it
honestly
came from.
It fits with the rest of Mordania. The makeout scene with Galadriel, I didn't realize he was such a a seductive I did not realize he had this kind of charm. I mean, I knew he had charm, but I didn't realize it was this also
sexualized. I think part of it too is think about, we also learned this episode, and this is this is big time, right? We also learned that Adar was, he was vying for number two since the beginning, right? He was there.
Uh-huh. Yes.
When Morgoth was daddy, and it's these two sons of Morgoth, right? And
right.
So I think Sauron is so frustrated because think about Adar, dude. He's always saying, my children, my children, my children, my legion of children.
Yeah.
God, dude, we get it. You've had a lot of kids.
Yep.
I think a way that Sauron kind of overcompensates for that is look what I'm going to do. I'm just going to, I'm not going to have any children. But I'm going to act like I could with, I'm going to do the, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
Set up franchises.
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. And I don't think we need to, again, this being a Tolkien
verse,
I don't think we need to say it. That's what I was
saying. We don't have to say it. But let's just say mingled with blood, right? So,
yeah,
you know.
Yep.
Okay, that's all.
Wild. You know what? I just realized, you know, that Narvi scene you're talking about, and then you've got the passing of this Mithril here. This is pretty this is some deep stuff, because he actually passes that Mithril during that vision that he's given Celebrimbor. So that is trippy. The power to kind of pull that off and do something real, but also have the whole facade going on, just crazy. This is just
pretty wild. It's a lot of power.
Yeah, it's all wild. All right, I think just to wrap up the episode, again, you just get more of the initial sort of like catapults, the fireballs coming into the city, and that's pretty much it. Like Celebrimbor goes back in, he's working away on the nine. There you go.
I have a theory about all this, because you know, you just sort of led right into it, which is perfect, like what you just said there.
Yep.
We talked about how his power is growing, we talked about like his ability to transport almost kind of instantaneously to cause a doom.
Yep.
We talked about his ability to shapeshift. We talked about his ability to, like you said, not only environmentally cloak, but produce something. Like he can multitask, which is crazy, right?
Oh, yeah.
I can't even make coffee and put my pants on at the same time, let alone construct a false environment and whip out some dust that I got from Narvi in possibly, you know, indiscriminate ways. Indiscreet. But I think they're going to get us again, dude. I think we're going to find out. I can't believe I'm saying this, man. I've never made a prediction like this.
Come on.
I'm sort of nervous, too. I'm kind of nervous. Just tell me it's okay.
It's okay, dude. Hey, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think he's already made the One Ring.
Shut up.
I think he's already made it.
You think, he's already made the One?
I think he's... And there's going to be another great redemption of what Peter Jackson screwed up, right? Messed it up. I think he's wearing it around his neck.
No way, dude.
So another theory I had is maybe not around the neck, but he might have it on his finger.
Yep.
And all of this is an illusion. It's all.
Got it. World. Got it. Wow. Honestly, dude, that's wild. That is actually really fitting. I like that a lot, to be honest with you.
Thank you, dude. Hey,
I can tell too, by the way. So that was a good summary. I feel like we covered everything that was in this episode. We're going to hit pretty quickly our three, if that's all right with you, Lane.
Let's not spend
a lot of time on it. Let's not dally. We'll go back and forth. We'll wrap up shop here. We'll see you guys over on Patreon, because I can tell Lane's got that voice. It's only got a few more minutes.
Does it sound bad? It sounds like it's
dead. It sounds good still. It probably sounds bad to your ears, but again, it's when you're speaking truth. When you're speaking truth, dude, it really takes a toll. It takes a toll on the voice. I know. That's.
I feel like the darkness is trying to get to me, because I'm just like,
right.
I've seen the light, man. Okay, and
dude, look at Alindo. It's hard to be faithful. It's hard to be somebody who's faithful to Tolkien's lore and who wants to uphold that, right, without being. I mean, you got people out here calling you trolls, calling you different things, and blah blah. It's tough, man.
Ridiculous.
So. It takes a toll on you as a person and on your voice and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, let's get into this real quick here. Let's roll. I'm going to start with my number one.
Yes.
All right.
Give it to us.
So my number one is just Sauron's powers. Legitimately, I was this is everything that I thought I would see in season one and in season two.
True.
Hey, shame on me. This is where it needed to be revealed, right here, this moment. And actually, Lottie brought up a really good point. The power that we saw in this episode doesn't work on orcs. It doesn't work the same way, dude, because they're orcs and Uruks. All right, my bad. And they
Uruks,
right. So since it works on elves, it works on dwarves and possibly men. But it will not work on those that are basically, you've got Morgoth, then you've got Adar, and then you've got the orcs, right? So they're his grandchildren, if that makes sense.
Oh, my God.
Yep, exactly. And so that's why the powers that he might have had over his own orcs don't work, dude. So this power, and by the way, the blood magic too, cutting his hand to pull off some blood magic kind of replicates what's going on over in the east. So anyway.
Oh wow!
Some connections there. I don't know if you're seeing this, but I will say teleporting around and stuff. If I felt like an idiot the other day when I was sort of like, man, it'd be really cool if I assume that's what Sauron's here and then he's there and then he's over here. He's doing this and that, and I feel like people were listening like, Ez, come on, man, they don't got that kind of power. Yeah, well, what do you think about what do you got to say now? What do you got to say now? I mean, we've seen Sauron teleporting around.
We've seen it with our own eyes.
It's crazy.
Eyes.
Unless we were just being deceived and that was all an illusion. I'm not sure. But still, I thought his powers were sick. And so, keeping it short, there you go. Sauron's power, number one.
And again, I want to echo what you said earlier. Take it easy on the trolls. It takes a toll being a troll.
For sure. Okay? Yeah.
For sure. They rhyme. Right. So, my number one, like a small thing, you know, let me live. Adar's glove.
Oh, yeah.
For like 2 years now, 3 years, when we first saw the first teaser posters, I've been enthralled. We thought at the time it was Sauron's glove, right? Remember, the very first posters were of just like torsos and hands, and they were holding objects. And the one for Adar, God, really sorry. The one for Adar was like with that glove. Mm-hmm. And I always thought to myself, like, dude, what is going on? I couldn't tell if it was spikes coming out of the knuckles or what it was. And we never really got a good, like, dynamic view of it, like, actually moving. And sure enough, this episode at dinner with Galadriel, we got to see that, like, the points don't happen when his hand is open. The points only happen when he makes a fist, because those parts are stationary while the rest of the glove moves.
Okay.
And it's almost like when you make a fist, you could punch someone and like use those as almost kind of like claws, a la Wolverine or something. Like you're literally your armored glove becomes a weapon. And to me, I was like, dang, because it made me go all the way back to John Howe. And we know John Howe has continued to design on this show.
Yeah.
And John Howe was always that guy who, you know, they would design stuff, Weta would, they would draw it up and they would say, John, is this functional? Mm-hmm. And John would be like, yep, or no, because for years and decades prior, he would wear the real stuff. And he would sometimes replicas, sometimes like actual legit authentic like breastplates and greaves and shoulder whatever they're called and helmets, because he's like a really slender guy and can fit into all that stuff.
Right.
So
right.
I thought it was a cool like kind of tip of the cap to something that John probably created and a subtle thing that has a lot of depth. So I love Adar's glove.
Hey, I love that. And you know what? That brings back one of the old theories, and this still may prove true, but that Adar might actually be a prince of the Noldor. He might be the eldest of the seven sons of Feanor. I don't know if you've, right? I mean, that gauntlet, you remember the eldest son, I can't say his name, but he burned his hand, right? He pried off one of those Silmarils, and he couldn't handle the pain, and so he cast himself into a fiery, right? He's got that burns on his face, and he's got the gauntlet?
Yep.
I mean, that fits, dude.
What did he bring up this episode, too? About the Silmarils being pried from the helm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gotta be him. Gotta be
Bingo.
Him. And so,
Bingo.
Right? I think that's pretty cool. He definitely would have been there for that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think his name is like...
Merdanya. Isn't it Merdanya?
It's Merdanya. What's his name? I'm pulling a Kelly Brimbor. I don't know his name.
Meglin.
It's M-A-E-D-H-R-O-S. There you go. I'll spell it for you guys. You guys say it out loud. Need that audio companion right now, pronto. Again, the showrunners do this to me on purpose.
Wait, spell it again.
M-A-E-D-H-R-O-S.
Oh yeah, Metros.
Yes, that's how you say it right there, friends.
Yeah.
I got my pronunciation. His voice is going, but he's still nailing it, still getting it. Okay, so number two for me, and I'm just gonna go quick on this one. It's just Adar in general. I think, you know, for a character that it just commands a lot of power. And so it kind of was great. You talked about his gauntlet, and I'm gonna keep right here with him. First, I had Sauron's power, but then I go to Adar, and I'm thinking like he was one of the 13. Chosen by Melkor?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Wild. That's a big deal, dude.
Yeah.
Like, that has to be someone who is really close and really well tied in with, like, the dark, dark lord, like, the big bad from the first age. That's a big deal.
Dang.
And so,
dang, dude.
It, you know, again, I don't know this, and I don't know all the Legendarium very well, so where they got that or where that information is tucked away at, I don't know how they did it, but that's impressive. That is literally, yeah. I mean, the implications here are huge, right? He's a part of the creation of Mordor, and like all the elves are just now starting to pick it. They picked up super fast that place is called Mordor. Like, you know what I'm saying?
That's true. They did. They did.
Super
spread
fast.
Like wildfire.
Spread like, I mean, they're all, everybody in the show is calling it Mordor now, and it was the Southlands in season one. So, matter of days, and they're like, Mordor. It's like, whoa.
Dude, I know.
How did they know that? But
they didn't even make like an official like press release or anything. Like, there was no like.
Nothing. Adar didn't even.
Name change.
I don't even think Adar. He said, well, they'll call it what they're going to call it, dude. He said, whatever.
Right.
Whatever the people name it, that's what we're going to roll with. So. I don't know
it's
if
wild,
he,
bro.
I don't know if he named it or if it was just
Waldreg. If it were Waldreg, honestly,
I think it could have been Waldreg sent out some letters or something and said, call this henceforth call this place Mordor. And so the scouts saw, as you said, one episode Sauron was going in. They said, where is he going at Mordor? He's going in there. And then I mean, I was waiting for King Gil-galad to say, what is that? Where is this place that you?
Yeah, no.
Right, but
no,
he's one of the wisest individuals in all of Middle Earth. So he knew they were talking about the volcano.
He knew. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I thought that was interesting that Adar is that individual who creates Mordor, one of the 13, knows Sauron in all these different forms, super powerful, actually kills him, almost freaking killed him. So huge deal. And I just think we got to see some of his power here and some of what's going on. Looks like he's going to be duped, though. Looks like he's actually going to be, I mean, Galadriel says, hey, he's kind of falling for Sauron's plan. You're playing right into his hand. So that's my number two.
Right into his hand. That's great.
What?
Full circle. Right into his hand. His gauntlet. His glove. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I meant to do that. Thank you.
Just Payne and McKay working through us. My number two is, again, Lloyd Owen.
Yeah,
and Charlie Vickers. Their performances are the trolls can say whatever they want about, you know, the interpretation of character, but I don't think anyone could argue that even if you argued like at times it's over the top or the performance is a bit like a bit I don't know, it's like just a little too much, like dialed up when it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I think in spite of all that, like, they're just really good actors. And
for sure.
It comes through even when everything else should get in its way and keep it from being something that resonates.
Right.
So, yeah. Lloyd Owen, Charlie Vickers, boom.
I agree with you. And I think yeah, their acting skills are off the charts. Honestly, it's, the fact that, like, Celebrimbor shoves Sauron back like that and the way he takes it. That, I mean, the way he sold that, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, for sure.
That was crazy, dude. Because it's hard. It's hard to put off a guy that has that much power and then also take that light shove from Celebrimbor.
Oh, for sure.
It looked like he knocked him back, like, with all the force in the world. Celebrimbor just barely touched him, and boom.
For sure, dude.
He goes flying back. And that takes a lot of acting skills. Now, it sounds like I'm making a joke there about Charlie Vickers, but honestly, it's just coming down to trying to play that part. It's a lot. It's a lot to be. A super powerful dude who's also getting pushed around and bullied by Celebrimbor to make him believe that he's got an edge up on, that he's still the ruler of Eregion. And actually, in all seriousness, those actors are freaking amazing. And they are killing it, dude. So
I mean, I totally agree.
It's stunning. Like, Lottie says the same thing, too. She's like, wow, he's really good. And I'm like, yeah, he's really solid.
Good. And the scene that, for me, for Charlie Vickers, was the that confrontation with D3 and D4. And, like, honestly, even though the scene was kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Right.
There was something in the way he did it where I was like, man, I don't, you know, something that the trolls wouldn't even buy.
But even
they would have to go like, I mean, that's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Right. Well, and you know, something else is a lot of those trolls who want to see a different version of the show, like the version that they talk about, dude, I think Charlie Vickers would have been a sick Celebrimbor for that version.
Yes, he would have.
An absolute sick Celebrimbor for, especially this Annatar version that we got. Imagine if he was actually the smith with the sleeves rolled up, hammering away, Feanor's hammer, all this kind of stuff. You know, man, that would have been wild.
Then you could do like the whole spurned lover of Galadriel would make sense, and it could work, and you could get that,
yep,
you know, tension kind of built
sure.
in.
For sure.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on, my number three here is going to be Muriel Sacrifice. Talk about stepping up yeah. and just coming out of yeah. nowhere and really showing that you are faithful. I mean, I thought like, yeah, like this is, Alindo's being done wrong here, and the fact that she steps up and has that moment, I thought was pretty cool, good for her, because so far, her character's just been like, hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm the regent, I'm going to lead you guys to war. Okay, that didn't yeah. go well, now I'm blind. I wasn't really sure where her character was going. So to see her step up here and really be a character that is kind of leading the faithful, I think we're getting that more. We're now really seeing them lean in here kind of mid season two
yeah.
into what it means to be a part of the faithful and understanding it. But it seemed like we had to figure that out in season one. Like it was supposed to be kind of implied, I guess, a little bit here and there. It was really subtle, yeah. really subtle. And it was hard to kind of understand that there were two factions. You know, because
right.
I feel yeah. like in season one, they're all seemingly together and just anti-elf.
They're all one group. Yeah.
Right. But
yeah.
we didn't quite understand how her father's relationship with the Palantirian. So now it's all coming yeah. together now. And Miro's sacrifice was a cool moment. And visually, it was stunning. And probably the best thing that actress has done yeah. so far in this series. I mean, she's met many, many good moments for her. But I think that actually was a really cool moment. So
also, like, the genius play they've made on like the trope blind faith.
Oh right? man. Yeah. I mean, it literally hits you right in the face, you know.
Pretty radical. Like a volcano. Like a pyroclastic.
I mean, stuff. Literally, I don't know, you couldn't avoid it. It's sort of like, it's a little too on the nose, you know what I'm saying? You know, like
yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But,
my number 3 was just again, it might seem like a small thing, but I like the way it looks is the Palantir, the way the Palantir interacts with
yeah.
people in this Second Age show. I think it's just a cool, like, splintering and shattering instead of like a kind of a swirling that we see within the Palantir. It's like this,
yeah,
this like kind of like erratic, scary thing that comes outward.
Right,
and
right.
I think that's a really cool way to just to visualize like ice cracking or glass cracking.
Yeah, it's like the whole screen
breaking into your mind. Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. I really like that. I think that's probably one of the coolest effects of this entire show for right. sure. So yeah,
I want to finish with an honorable mention, and I think you'll agree.
Okay.
I think you'll agree with me on this one. I hope. I actually okay. think Sauron's costume, his black costume, pretty sick
dude.
Pretty that, sick. That, when he stepped out there, I was like, "Tall, okay, yeah. what's up?" I mean,
the shoulder armor. That
Adar,
kind of like,
hey, Adar's trying to call himself daddy. And I said, Sauron, hey, what's up, daddy? I mean, he literally walked out like stunning. I was like, dude,
yeah.
that was insane. So
his outfits have gotten more and more dark. Like they started really light and they've gotten increasingly darker.
Right. I mean, honestly, pretty cool.
Cool.
And I think, yeah. you know, in any sort of adaptation, that would have been a really cool choice to kind of have that. It just,
yeah,
it's, yeah.
They look like dragon scales almost. I
yeah.
love that kind of leather yeah. armor. Yeah. It's sweet.
Looked really good.
Yeah.
So,
heck yeah, brother.
All right, man. Hey, well, guys, that's the good right there, baby. That is what we're talking about.
Woo!
This is, well, I mean, you know, go refresh your episode and you'll see it's season 2, episode 6, Where is the Good? And it's just a great title. It's a great episode. We loved it. Hope you guys love it. And,
it changed again?
It changed again, dude. It's just again. Well, I think it stops after 10 replays. I could be wrong, but I
okay.
think it will go 10 hours straight replaying.
See, I thought it was 9. It would have been perfect if it was 9.
You're right.
Men.
You're right. You're right. No, that was me on the 10th.
Oh, well.
I woke up and was starting it over. You're right. It was. They perfected
oh.
it.
It is that. Okay. Perfected.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. All right, guys. Hey, we'll be back over on Patreon with another, maybe a little briefer episode. We'll see how Lane's voice does. I think I'm just going to get carried away.
I don't know if my voice is going to last.
I don't think so. So I'm going to just take us away for maybe 20 minutes over there, and you guys can listen in, and we'll reveal the secrets of this episode. Appreciate you guys. We'll be back next week. We do love you. And again, hey, don't be trolling. Don't be out there trolling. All right? Seriously. You guys need to... It's just a show. Have some fun with it and enjoy yourselves. We're enjoying ourselves here. We hope that you are. Actually, I really genuinely do like watching it. I enjoy talking with Lane about it and Lottie. And I've pulled out the books and I'm going crazy. So it is doing, it is definitely, I'm taking the best that I can from it. It's been really good so far. So with that, remember, friends, that this show lives and it replays over and over and over again.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.